Our next presenter, thankful to say, has been with us numerous times, a well-known speaker and author. He's going to be talking about a very provoking thought. People get ready. The fight against a jobless economy and a citizenless democracy. Thank you, John Nichols.
Brothers and sisters, why, at the end of Kathleen Beinhout's speech, I thought I almost heard an echo of Bernie Sanders there. And I felt refreshed and encouraged. So I feel that we have come here today to buff our rural credentials. Let me introduce myself as John Nichols, native of Union Grove, Wisconsin. Population 970 when I was born. I was 971. But Union Grove was the biggest town we ever got to. My people, their roots are in Blue River, where we are pushing hard toward the population of 400. Out around Linton, west of Mineral Point, where we are proud to say that our local population is getting very close to that of the cemetery. And beyond that, most of my relatives came from smaller places, country crossroads, farm towns across this state. It was from those people that I learned to be an unyielding, absolute, unblinking progressive. Progressivism is not liberalism. Liberalism is soft and weak, and it likes to argue with conservatives. I have no taste for liberalism. I like some liberals. They're sweet people. But as they say in rural Wisconsin, if your car breaks down by the side of the road, a conservative will drive by chuckling. A liberal will slow down, roll his window down, and say, "Tough luck, I hope it works out for you." A progressive will get out of her car, come on over and say, "Let's open up the hood there and see what we can do to get it going." Of course, a socialist will say, "Jump in my car, let's drive into town, take over the means of production, and make you a new car." So, I know that we're supposed to talk about all these important topics, and I appreciate that, but I have to honor my dear mother, who lives out near Burlington, Wisconsin. And my mom always taught me, and to many people, I think you'll all recognize this, good Wisconsin values. If you meet somebody, you're nice to them to their face. I don't care who you meet. Kathy, that's good counsel for you. They're going to be nice to you. Because that's how we are. Now, when you leave, we talk about you behind your back. And that's the coolest thing about us. Now, my mother was the sweetest person in the world. She said, "How's your child? How's your kid doing?" And then, you know, everybody, blah, blah, blah. And then they'd leave me. My mom said, "That kid is a mess." Now, the fact of the matter is that when we good Wisconsinites run into folks, we're very polite to them and to their face. But when they're not around, we sometimes can be a little bit gossipy, a little bit cruel. And so I'd like to just take a moment up front to speak about a couple of people who are not in the room. Ryan and Donald Trump. Now, I'm not going to waste my whole speech talking about them because their day is past. But I will mention, because as a good Wisconsinite, I like to gloat. that these folks spent 8 years saying that the one thing they were going to do was get rid of the Affordable Care Act. They spent 8 years saying that's the one thing that united them. Donald Trump, New York playboy, donor to Planned Parenthood, biblical scholar. So you know what I got in common with that Paul Ryan, man, we all agree we got to get rid of some of this health care and make sure that people can't take care of their pre-existing conditions or whatever. Until that's the one thing they were united on. And they won the election. And we'll talk in a moment about winning, because I love that number stuff. I'm into that number stuff. But they prevailed. They took power. They got the presidency of the United States of America, the most powerful office in the world. They got the United States Senate, greatest deliberative body in the world. They got the U.S. House of Representatives, the People's House. They got it all! They said, well, you know, the first thing we got to do is we got to repeal that Obamacare, repeal and replace. So they got all the power. They got everything in place. And they said, well, we got to do it this week. We got to do it on Thursday. Oh, you know, well, we got an extra day. You know how people put things off. We'll do it on Friday. Well, yesterday was Friday. And Donald Trump and Paul Ryan withdrew their effort to overturn the Affordable Care Act. They failed. Sad. Now, how was it with all this power, with all this position, they would fail? How could they fail, Charlie Upoff? How could they fail to overturn it? It was such an easy thing. It's so horrible, everybody hated it. Everybody hates health care. We prefer to be sick and die. Well, you know what happened? Do you know what happened? And this is the most wonderful thing about politics. Most of the time, politics is nonsense. It is lies and cheating and stealing. It's as bad as some of those elections Ms. McKim was speaking about. Why, it's a completely useless endeavor. But every once in a while, you get focused on something. And after all the years of lies and... I was going to use a word that I can't, but I could on the farm. After all that, finally you get focused. And what do you come down to? Polling today shows that Barack Hussein Obama's Affordable Care Act, Nancy Pelosi's Affordable Care Act, the health care reform that could not be done until an African-American man was president of the United States and a woman was the Speaker of the House. Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act and Nancy Pelosi's Affordable Care Act is more popular than it has ever been because people see it as the beginning of a health care reform that says health care is not a privilege of the wealthy. It is a right of every human being. I love it when we get focused. I love it when we get real. And I love what's revealed. Do you realize what they were ready to bargain away yesterday to try and pass this thing? What they were ready to bargain away was something. I actually heard a conservative commentator, Michelle Malkin, she was on the radio. She's going, yeah, and we've got to get these essential protections on the table. They were ready to barter away essential protections. Your maternity care, your emergency room visit, the basic protections that should be in every insurance policy so that people don't get ripped off, so that people are not robbed when they buy an insurance policy. They were ready to barter all of that away. They were ready to trade away anything to redistribute the wealth upwards. Because that's what this bill was. Donald Trump doesn't know anything about health care. You've seen his doctor, right? So he said, I'll get that smart guy, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, who is what not-so-bright people think a smart guy sounds like. So you get that Paul Ryan, he's going to write up a bill. And Paul Ryan said, really? You're going to let me write it? Even the Republicans didn't let me write it. This is great. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take all these protections, gut them out, then we're going to take the money we save and use it for a great big tax break, $250 billion for rich people. Isn't that a great idea? And everybody in the world, four-year-old children said, bad. Very bad idea, probably the worst idea ever. And so here you have these two people. Billionaire businessman, the art of the deal. Prettiest guy ever in Congress. They get together, they're gonna reform our healthcare. They say, well, we're smarter than that African American guy and that lady. We know how to do this thing. Well, it turns out they did it so bad that they had all the power you could possibly get. And they still couldn't pass their horrible, lousy assault on human beings and their redistribution. So it gets to the core question that our wonderful speakers have raised today. And here is this core question. If they're that incompetent, if they're that lousy at what they do, and frankly, if they're that cruel to take away your, you know, to take away your coverage for maternity care, which I don't really need, but, you know, I understand there's many people who care about that. We valued it when my daughter was born. Take away all this stuff. How did people of goodwill lose to them? Ooh, bummer question, right? That's the bummer question because, you know, it's like you look at Donald Trump, And everybody says, well, Donald Trump, he's a horrible man. He's stupid, he's incompetent, he's all these awful things. Well, he beat you. And so this is a problematic situation. So I'm gonna, my friends were putting some numbers on, let me put a couple numbers on the table for you. 54, 46, and 8. So remember these, 54, 46, and 8. Everybody says Donald Trump got elected president. 54% of Americans who voted on November 8th did not vote for Donald Trump for President of the United States. 46. 46 is the actual percentage of the vote he got, 1% less than Mitt Romney in 2012. He actually underperformed Republicans running for President of the United States. He got 3 million fewer votes than the woman who was the popular choice of the American people. Now, we've often said that when women go to work in a bank or a school or another place, they often end up training an incompetent manager. They often don't get their due. They often don't get their full pay. Well, now we have a pay equity moment in presidential politics. The woman got the most votes, but she didn't get the office. This is a problematic circumstance, but one that is real. 46% she got, 48. Now the final percentage, 8. 8% is the rough underperformance of voter turnout from the 2012 or 2008 election, not 12. 12 were relatively parallel. 2008 election, when you saw that maximized Democratic turnout, Democrats took the House, Senate, presidency, etc. So you had an 8% drop off. Now that's bad because we already have some of the most atrocious voter turnout in the world. I mean, they're developing countries that if they had the level of voter turnout that the United States has, would say, we're not functioning. This is not a democracy. So we had a depressed turnout. And I love what Kathy's done on urban-rural. I love what Nate said, what everybody said up here. But here's the bottom line. No matter, as Kathleen was saying, no matter where people turn out, if there's less of them on your side, a funny thing happens. you lose. And so the key to 2016 was a depressed energy, a depressed level of mobilization. We should have increasing turnout, not decreasing turnout. Why do we have it? Because our democracy has moved to an absolutely dysfunctional place. Our democracy is in crisis. And it is the crisis is severe. It is all the things that we just heard about here, including the verification of voting. You know, in Ireland, they have elections. You know what they use? This incredible technology, a piece of paper. Holland just had the threat of fascism coming at him. Geert Wilders, the candidate of some of Donald Trump's favorite people, Steve King and folks like that, was trying to take over Holland. They were so afraid that their election would be, you know, interfered with or messed with by outside forces. And so they went to an emergency technological fix, a piece of paper. They had a paper ballot. They counted all the votes in one night, and they beat fascism. So we have a horrible crisis, and here's the core of our crisis, and these are the critical elements. Number one, we have gerrymandering of our legislative districts. We should not underestimate that. Most elections are not competitive in America, and I thank God that the courts have taken the Wisconsin gerrymandering case and said we have a constitutional right to a competitive election. Number two, we have a money and politics crisis in this country that is so severe that it allows incompetent and dysfunctional candidates to beat credible and functional candidates, because at the last minute, money is flowed into an election by out-of-state forces who do not care about the people in that state, but do care about buying power. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, you just ask Senator Russ Feingold. Lastly, we have an electoral college in this country. We have an electoral college in this country that allows the loser of an election to become the president of the United States. I don't care what Donald Trump tweets. He lost the 2016 election by 3 million votes. So, all that good stuff. It's great. Got a lot to reform. One final quick note on the Democratic Party. Or as I like to say, who? Look, the Democratic Party blew the 2016 election at a miserable level. Anybody who doesn't recognize that is not paying close attention to what's going on. The fact of the matter is, it's not about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Although I will note that Bernie Sanders won 71 Wisconsin counties. But it's not about personalities. It is about the reality that we are moving forward economically. Every election is part of an evolution. In the book that Bob and I wrote, People Get Ready, we talk about the reality of our current circumstance. We are 30 years into a globalization revolution that is transforming everything about how we relate to the world. We are 20 years into a digital revolution that is so revolutionary, so transformative in every aspect of how we communicate, that most of you have not seen the faces of your children or your grandchildren because they are locked in a phone. Right? They're all sitting around like that. It is literally, and if you don't believe that is radically transforming everything about us, not paying attention. We are 10 years into an automation revolution that will change everything about how we work. It literally will take away, according to Harvard experts, up to half the jobs that we now have in the next 30 years. The driverless car sounds great until you think about truckers, cab drivers, people who drive forklifts, everybody who drives something with wheels, many of them guys, job's gone. The digitalization and automation of banks and of so many of our service industries sounds great, makes it easy, you can do it all through your phone, except that we now know that bank branches and all sorts of other service locations where tons of people work, many of them women, will be eliminated, not in the next 50 years, next 30 years, in the next 10 years. We literally see a massive culling out of the banking industry. And so the bottom line is that when people looked at the 2016 election, what they looked at was a circumstance that no matter what politicians told them, they knew that the future was going to be radically different than the past, and they had very little concept of how they would fit into that future. This is not about urban and rural, per se, and it's certainly not about Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative. What it is about is a failure on the part of the Democratic Party to talk about the future. And that was their job. Because Donald Trump wasn't going to talk about the future. His slogan was "Make America Great Again." The operative word was "again." What Donald Trump was promising people was a trip to the past, not the future. And people would settle for that if there's no future, right? If you don't spell out a future. The Democratic Party failed at every turn to spell out a future, to say that in this globalized, digitalized, automated economy, there's going to be a place for you. The reason that Bernie Sanders did so well in the primaries wasn't that he did a particularly good job of talking about the future, but he did talk about social democracy. What he said was that in the future, you would have guaranteed Medicare for all, single-payer health care, so you didn't have to worry about how to get a bit of health care for yourself, no matter what your job was. He said you were going to have free education because you were going to need a lot of retraining so that you could find that next job in the future. This whole thing of, oh, well, you can't promise people free education, you can't promise them something free. No, the only thing that made sense was free education, public education, as far as you can get so that you can realize the fullness of your promise. Run through all of his issues. That's why he did well. He didn't do well because everybody was looking for a 74-year-old crotchety Democratic Socialist for promotion. So, democracy's a mess. Economy's scary. Where do we go from here? I love where we're at because now we get to resist. Resistance is so cool and so fun. I love the Women's March. I love every bit of it. Since Donald Trump became president of the United States, his national security advisor has had to quit. His choice for labor secretary has had to withdraw. His major legislative initiative, the overturning of Obamacare, has been withdrawn. Again and again and again, this presidency has failed because there has been a massive resistance to this president. And I will close off with what makes me feel a love for my country and my place more than anything. It just, I love this country so much. I like drip with it. I cry when the flag goes by. The only thing that makes it gets a bigger tear in my eyes is when the Wisconsin flag goes by. But I'll tell you, when Steve Bannon and Donald Trump decided they were going to ban Muslims from this country, this country where the first mosque was built in Ross, North Dakota, population 64, back in 1929, this country where Muslims have been a part of our experience from before the revolution, this country where Muslims have their mother mosque, not in New York City or Los Angeles, but in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. In this great country, when Donald Trump came after Muslims, and particularly Muslim immigrants and refugees, the response of this country, the response of this resistance, was to go where the pain was. The politicians didn't know what to do. The media was just chattering away, useless as ever. Not the enemy of the people, but often useless. People went to the airports on that Saturday night. They said, "Assalamu alaikum." They said, "Shalom." They said, "Blessings upon you. I do not care what your religion is. I stand with you because you are a human being and you are being oppressed by those who do not understand the American promise that there shall be no religious test." Jews and Christians and Hindus went to those airports to stand with Muslims and to defend them. And out in Seattle, Washington, there was a plane that landed, and there were a couple of Muslim gentleman on that plane. They had their paperwork, but it wasn't the proper paperwork. People didn't understand that they should be admitted to the country. They were put on a plane to be sent away. Congresswoman Kramiya Jayapal, who is the newly elected, brand new congresswoman from out in Seattle, she was an immigrant rights activist before she got to Congress. She heard that what was happening, and she went and she got a court order to get those two people off that airplane. And she went to SeaTac Airport, one of the biggest airports in the United States, and she got to that gate where they, you know, you're supposed to go through all the security, and they said, well, you can't go through, you don't have a ticket. She said, I've got lawyers here, I've got a legal document, I'm here to deliver this document and say those people cannot be taken from the United States because they have a right to be here. And he said, well, you can't come through, you just can't. And she says, I have to go through. And they say, well, if you go through, you'll shut down the whole airport. If somebody breaches security, it shuts down the entire airport. And Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal said, if I have to. And she went through, they found a way through, they got her out there. She went out on the tarmac of that airport. She went to where the plane was, and she delivered that paperwork. They let those two people off that plane. She escorted them into Seattle. By the next morning, they were with their families. Brothers and sisters, we live in glorious times. We live in the most positive of all times. We face an incredible challenge. And our challenge is to build a resistance that is bigger and stronger than their hatred, their cruelty, their desire to dismantle that which we are. And to build from that resistance, not merely a street-level political resistance, but an electoral resistance of the sort that was spoken of here. And, you know, we've spent so much time talking about urban and rural. I thought I would remind you that in 1863, when a unit of Wisconsinites, the 24th Wisconsin, had gone down to Lookout Mountain. The Wisconsinites weren't the great heroes of that fight. They weren't the ones that were focused on. The big folks from Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, they were over at Lookout Mountain. They put the Wisconsinites over by Missionary Ridge. It was a tall ridge, but it was over to the side. And the Confederates were arrayed along the top. People knew that if they could breach this line, they would enter the Deep South and begin the true struggle against the original sin of the American experiment, slavery. Not a fight on northern or border state land, but going into the South itself. The Wisconsinites were down there. The other units over at Lookout Mountain had been defeated. They had failed to take Lookout Mountain. And the word was that this fight, this day, was done. That the line would not be broken. That the Deep South would not be entered by forces of a Union that was fighting against the sin of slavery itself. Down at the bottom of that hill, the 24th Wisconsin said, well, we don't actually view this fight as being done today. And so they decided to charge and to try and get up that hill. The first kid that ran up that hill was, and this is sad, it's a horrible story, he was decapitated by a Confederate cannonball. Another kid grabbed the flag and started going up the hill, and these were all kids. Another kid started going up the hill and he was torn apart by Confederate fire. The flag was on the ground and a young kid, 18 years old, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, grabbed it. And he ran up the hill, holding the regimental banner of the 24th, the Wisconsin flag. And he got to the top of that hill and somehow, with bullets in his arm and other parts of his body, he went among those Confederates. He literally shot them by standing among them, planting that Wisconsin flag, and yelling at the top of his lungs, on Wisconsin, on Wisconsin. And the Wisconsinites poured over those battlements and began running up that hill. The kid who got to the top was from Milwaukee, but those kids who came over those battlements were from Iowa County and Lafayette County and Dane County and Waupaca and places across this state, and they ran up that hill. Many of them died, but enough of them got to the top of that hill to take Missionary Ridge and to take the battle against slavery into the Deep South. Brothers and sisters, that is our legacy. When we're down, when we're in the toughest of positions. It is Wisconsinites who look at the hardest battle ahead and say, we're going up that hill. We're planting our flag. We are yelling on Wisconsin, and we will defeat economic and social injustice. We will defeat the Trumps and the Ryans. We will defeat all of those who stand in the way of justice itself. We will chant on Wisconsin, and we will prevail. Solidarity.
We've got